Our third case this morning is, well, let me get on to the third case. Our third case this morning is 2021-229, Cleveland Metro Bar Association versus Douglas Paul Whipple. For the respondent, Mr. Whippo, pro se.
Good morning, Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court. I am respondent Douglas Whipple. I ask to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The board's recommended sanction of suspension in any amount of time is not appropriate and not justified on this record. I agree that I should not have filed the OLAP motion. But it did not threaten professional misconduct or criminal charges against Mr. Sinnenberg.
Why did you file it?
Over here.
Thank you, Justice Fischer.
Why did you file it?
The June 10th hearing was coming up, which I fully anticipated, as did Judge Hagen, would be the dismissal of the case. The week before, I did see this article, Cleveland.com, wherein Mr. Sinnenberg acknowledged in an unrelated case retaliation against a witness. And it was at that time that I recognized, or at least formed an opinion for the first time, that he, in my opinion, in my subjective opinion, he had a mental, emotional, or other condition impairing his performance. And this, in my mind, was the genesis of why he was challenging Mrs. Seeley's mental condition when there was no evidence whatsoever of it.
Why not call up OLAP and ask them to intervene with an intervention or something? That's confidential, you know, right?
I made a mistake. I acknowledge that. It was my belief at the time. Look, it's hard for me to justify the mistake that I made, but it was my belief that a referral from Judge Hagen, and I used the language in the motion came from the Judicial Conduct 2.14. That language was what I used to formulate the evidence, the pattern of his conduct, so that I could garner together the history. And I might add, his conduct is not challenged by anyone. Only what's challenged is my motive. So in...
Hence my question, why?
At the 11th hour, under the press of all of this, and my apprehension about his retaliation up to that point and potential retaliation in the future, even after the case was over,
it was a trial tactic. It was a tactic to gain an advantage?
No, absolutely not. One of the things, Mary Coneville from Legal Aid Society said, I am a person of compassion. I have compassion for difficult people. I had compassion for Roger Sinnenberg. Everyone else, as she testified, as Mr. Sinnenberg testified, was gossiping about professional misconduct, criminal, whatever. I was introducing into the conversation OLAP, compassion, something else, treatment for a person.
Okay, wait a second. Are you saying you made a mistake, or are you saying that you were a compassionate person and you thought, well, geez, I'm going to help Roger Sinnenberg out by referring him to OLAP?
Yes, absolutely.
Couldn't you have done that in a pre-hearing conference? I'm over here. Couldn't you have done that in a pre-hearing conference off the record?
The short answer is yes, except Judge Hagan never had those. But the short answer is yes. There's any number of things I could have done differently and should have done differently.
Couldn't you have requested it?
Yes, I could have done that. If I had done any of those other things, I wouldn't stand before you and say I made a mistake. Okay?
But counsel, you publicized it.
That was the mistake.
Well, how about the referral to begin with?
I don't understand. There was two mistakes. One, asking Judge Hagan, I could have made my own referral, I could have asked somebody else. Asking Judge Hagan, putting her on the spot was wrong. Number two, doing it publicly by way of motion.
Okay, go back to how you put Judge Hagan on the spot.
I put her on the spot because she was new to the case. Judge Freeland knew these things. She was sick. Couldn't ask her. Didn't need to ask any judge. Could have asked a judge, but didn't need to. Didn't need to be done. Could have tried the staff attorney. Any number of other people I could have tried. I went to her. Bad call. I went to her with a motion. Bad call. Okay. But this is my point. Yes, I made a mistake. I acknowledge that. But they are saying, when you read the words, and you look at their answer brief, page 13, they say the threats were there. All you have to do is read between the lines. But there were no threats. I made a big mistake. But there were no threats. Well, I didn't threaten.
Counselor,
I didn't want
to. I think what the problem is not just that you did this publicly, but that you seem to say on several occasions, this will all go away if we just get this settlement done, right?
I was recognizing for the benefit of Judge Hagan any number of options that she had, because I also recognized.
Doesn't that sound like you're saying, okay, this goes away? All we got to do is agree to this.
That's the interpretation the spin that everyone's putting on it. But at the same time, my spin is, Judge Hagan, you can make the referral now, or you can make it later. You can agree with me, you can disagree with me. But I said very emphatically, I think this man needs help. I've always been a person with compassion. I have compassion for him. And the day after, I still made the referral. And when they said, well, that's not enough, you have to reach out and find two other people to corroborate, I did that. I stood by my word. They say I have no compassion, but they haven't put in any evidence that I don't have compassion.
Okay, so I want to take you in a different direction over
yes.
here. If we do nothing and say, okay, this is a mistake, you have no prior record, you know, this is the acceleration of winning litigation by attacking the other lawyer instead of staying on the substance. And I know it may have been upsetting that your client's medical and mental health records were being requested, but if we let this go, aren't we saying it's okay to try to win your case by just cutting down the other attorney?
Respectfully, no, that's absolutely false.
Why not?
First of all, Judge Hagan testified the case was going to be dismissed. The motion had nothing to do with it. Roger Sinnenberg testified towards the end of his testimony that two had nothing to do with it. She was going to dismiss the case whether the motion had been granted or not granted. In my testimony, I said, You can dismiss it or not dismiss it. It has nothing to do with it.
Counsel,
and in fact, that's
counsel,
what happened.
Counsel, Did you know the case was going to be dismissed when you referred, when you got this OLAP involved and you talked to other people and tried to get corroboration for your thoughts on Roger Sinnenberg?
The short answer is no, I didn't know what was in Judge Hagen's mind, and my corroboration came after the fact. No, I didn't know for sure, but you know, I'm a seasoned lawyer. I knew she was very, very strongly, adamantly of the belief the case was going to get dismissed on the 10th. But I can't read her mind. I can't control her. I just instinctively knew, by gosh, the case was going to get dismissed on the 10th. And I also knew I had fully complied with her requirements to confirm that Christina Seeley was a normal adult.
So why do you think she filed the grievance? Why do you think the judge filed the grievance against you?
I will say this, and I say it out of respect to her, okay? She testified, and I didn't know this till she testified, of all of this chatter in the judicial center about Mr. Sinnenberg. She had been hearing all this chatter about everyone else thinking he needed to be referred professionally or even criminally. And when she testified at the hearing, she talked about how she believed, Judge Hagen believed, that I wanted professional misconduct charges. And she said to me, it was your responsibility, if you thought he committed professional misconduct, it was your responsibility to bring the charge against him. Well, that's true. If I thought he committed professional misconduct, it was my responsibility to bring the charge. Except I didn't think he committed professional misconduct. I didn't want him to be charged professionally. I wanted him to have the benefits of an OLAP referral. I have been this way all my life, all my 41 years of practice. I believe very much in OLAP. This was a situation where I wanted somebody to, I'm losing track of my, okay, I got time. I wanted somebody to have the benefit of OLAP. I sincerely wanted it, and I went about the wrong way to do it. My timing was wrong. The person I went to was wrong. It doesn't alter the fact in my testimony then, and in my testimony ever since then consistently has been, I had genuine reason to believe he was suffering, he needed a referral, and I wanted to interject that message, and I did it the wrong way, but it was still a sincere, honest belief that was something he would benefit from, and I would feel good if he did, in fact, need it, that he would get it.
Did you believe that his mental health problem would go away if the case was dismissed?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Well, then how do you tell me about your statement, you know, if the case gets dismissed, then we don't have to worry about this?
I'm sorry. I don't know where you've...
Let me get the exact wording then.
Is that from the newspaper article?
No, this is from the report and recommendation.
Okay.
Quote, if we dismiss this case, then we don't need a ruling on my motion. If we don't dismiss the case, then I'd like to address the merits of my motion. Close quote.
You don't need a ruling on the motion because I'll just go ahead and make the referral on my own. I invited. Everyone says I was trying to force her to make the referral. No, I was never trying to force Judge Hagen. I would never force a judge to do anything. I can't force a judge. I was inviting her to make her own discretion based on much of the evidence which was before she was on the bench. I was trying to give her the opportunity, and if she chose not to, I'm running out of time, I think. If she chose not to, that was fine. I would proceed on my own.
Well, a little later, you're quoted as saying, quote, if they still have conditions to the stipulated dismissal, then I want to discuss my motion. If they don't have conditions, I'm ready to sign stipulated dismissal
their
right now.
Their conditions is they still wanted to challenge the mental capacity of Christina, which to me was another manifestation of his his condition and perhaps his more retaliation that needed, you know, again, it was an exercise in what I considered his condition. There was never any question that she had a problem, but for the first time, I began to believe that he did. And then,
all right, there's no, you say there's no question that your client had a problem.
There's no question. She did not have, she was always a normal elderly adult. There was never any evidence whatsoever. And I could never understand why Roger Sinnenberg kept pressing the issue, until I read that newspaper article. And then for the first time, I began to think maybe he needed some help, and I'd like him to get some help.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chief Justice, and other distinguished members of the court. My name is Melissa Kelly, and I represent the relator, the Cleveland Metropolitan Bar Association, in this case. With me at the counsel's table is Emily Johnson, my colleague who has worked on this matter with me from the very beginning. There are two issues before the court today. The first is whether clear and convincing evidence supports the board's conclusion that the respondent violated professional conduct rules 1.2E, 3.4, 8.4A, and 8.4D. The second is whether the sanction recommended by the board, a one-year suspension with 6 months stayed, is appropriate and should be adopted by this court. And the answer to both of those questions is yes. I have four main points today before I that I'll talk about generally before I address Mr. Whipple's arguments. The first is that Mr. Whipple's own words and actions in this case reveal that his sole purpose in filing the fitness motion was to pressure Roger Sinnenberg into dismissing the Seeley litigation in violation of Rule 1.2E. It's not our argument that we were trying to force Judge Hagen, or that he, excuse me, was trying to force Judge Hagen into making a referral. The 1.2E violation is that he was trying to pressure Roger Sinnenberg into dismissing the Seeley litigation. The second point is that the fitness motion was a frivolous motion in violation of Rule 3.1. The third is that respondent's conduct in this matter violated rules 8.4A and D. And the final point is that the recommended sanction is appropriate and should be adopted in light of his conduct in this matter. I'd like to address Mr. Whipple's contention that he did not intend to actually threaten Roger Sinnenberg with professional misconduct charges, that he actually was acting out of some genuine concern for Mr. Sinnenberg's mental health and capacity to practice law. He of course, testified as much at the hearing in this case, and the panel obviously rejected the credibility of that testimony. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here today. They would have accepted his testimony and said no violation, and we'd all be doing something else at this very moment. But the panel didn't. The panel decided that he wasn't credible. And this court's practice is to give deference to that credibility determination unless the record weighs heavily against it. This court has repeatedly said that in disciplinary cases since at least 2003 in Statzer, and it reiterated that idea again in Wise, which is one of the cases we rely on for our sanction. So the only way that his testimony, or excuse me, his statements here today should receive any credit is if the record weighs heavily against them, and the record doesn't. The contention that Mr. Whipple had any genuine concern for Roger Sinnenberg is discredited by the actual facts that are in the record. Let's start with the fact that the fitness motion, as several of you mentioned to Mr. Whipple, was filed on the public docket. He made the decision to file it on the public docket, despite acknowledging during his hearing testimony that he knows that he can contact OLAP, and that he knows that OLAP is a confidential procedure. It's intended to protect the people who might need OLAP's assistance. That's the point. And he filed the motion on the public docket despite understanding that there are ways to get that done, to contact Judge Hagen. Let's say that he actually did I want to involve Judge Hagan because I think it'll give more credence to my request to OLAP. He knew that he could send things to her and make them confidential and keep them off the public docket because he'd done it in the Seeley litigation. He sent Judge Hagan his own client's confidential medical information by email, by a letter attached to an email. It never made it to the public docket because he didn't want it to, because he wanted to protect it. But he didn't give Mr. Sinnenberg that same courtesy. Instead, he filed it on the public docket. There's the additional fact that Mr. Whipple didn't actually contact OLAP until after the June 10th, 2019 hearing. And he admitted that here, and he tried to, you know, say that it was because of the press of business and the No, the reason he did that, the reason he contacted OLAP the day after the hearing, is because at the hearing, Judge Hagan said to him, I think you might have violated Rule 1.2E. She was so convinced that he had violated Rule 1.2E that she came to that June 10th, 2019 hearing with a copy of the rule. She read the fitness motion, said, I think there's a violation here. In fact, her testimony at the discipline hearing was that she was shocked by the fitness motion. She came to the hearing with the rule in her hand, and she told him at the end, I think you might have violated a rule. I hope that's not what happened here. So, of course, the next day he contacts OLAP because he realizes he was in trouble, that his actions were raising suspicions amongst Judge Hagan. The additional fact that demonstrates that he didn't act out of any genuine concern for Roger Sinnenberg is that he stopped looking for the corroboration requested by OLAP after asking two people. He testified as much at the disciplinary hearing. He asked two and stopped. Now, Mr. Sinnenberg is a well-known Cleveland attorney. He interacts with myriad other lawyers every day. Mr. Whipple had multiple resources that he could, you know, people he could approach and ask, do you have concerns? I have these concerns. Do you have them? He could have asked Mr. Sinnenberg's law partners. He didn't. He asked two people and stopped. That seriously undermines and discredits his contention that he had any concern for Roger Sinnenberg. And then finally, he talks about having compassion for Roger Sinnenberg. If you look at the record of the litigation below, that is absolutely undermined by the fact that there was no love lost by the lawyers in this case. There were contentious disputes about discovery. There were very unpleasant emails passed back and forth, between both sides. There was simply no love lost. And as Mr. Sinnenberg actually testified at the disciplinary hearing, he said, referring to Mr. Whipple, he didn't have a kind word to say to me for a year and a half. And all of a sudden, he's telling the judge he's concerned about me. It was so hollow. So all of those facts weigh heavily in favor of the board's decision to discredit Mr. Whipple's testimony that he was acting out of some genuine concern for Mr. Sinnenberg. And then the other point that I'd like to address right away is that is Mr. Whipple's contention that his fitness motion didn't actually contain a threat of disciplinary charges or misconduct charges. The threat of the conduct charges is clear in the fitness motion. You have to look at what the fitness motion does. It describes a series of instances, both the incident that wasn't involved in the underlying case, and then also instances of conduct by Roger Sinnenberg that, while he didn't tie them to a rule violation, he didn't, in the fitness motion, say, you know, Roger Sinnenberg ended a deposition early and that's a violation of this specific rule. But he described instances of conduct that would constitute violations of the professional conduct rules. At the hearing, Judge Hagan agreed. I had the privilege of directing Judge Hagan at the hearing, and I asked her about each one of the allegations in the fitness motion. Would this be a disciplinary issue? Would this be a rule violation? Yes, yes, yes. He listed rule violations, and then he coupled that with the fact that rife in the motion is rife. It's replete with references to some unspecified condition that he said that Roger Sinnenberg was suffering from. He used the word condition. He used the word impaired. He talked about how Roger Sinnenberg was suffering, this is a quote, suffering from a mental, emotional, or other condition, that he was suffering from performance issues, that Roger Sinnenberg's behavior might reasonably justify further investigation because it was perhaps the result of a mental, emotional, or other condition. So what was happening in the fitness motion? He was tying allegations of misconduct with clear references to Rule 8.3A. which requires lawyers in Ohio to report violations of the rules of professional conduct when those violations raise questions as to a lawyer's fitness as a lawyer. Every single one of those phrases that I just quoted directly attacks Roger Sinnenberg's fitness as a lawyer. So the threat is clear. Did he say in the OLAP, or in the fitness motion, oh, I want you to bring Roger Sinnenberg up on professional charges, I want you to refer him to the board? No, he didn't. He wouldn't do that. He wouldn't do that, something so overt. But the threat was there because it said, here are instances of conduct that I can point to. Here's a description of your, you know, mental condition, your mental health, that suggests that you're impaired. So this is what I can use on you, and Rule 8.3 is the vehicle that I can use to get you into trouble. And the panel absolutely saw this for what it was. In paragraph 65 of the panel report, the panel said, the motion was framed as a referral to OLAP in order to avoid any allegation that the motion may violate Rule 1.2E. And in addition, the contents of the motion could have prompted Judge Hagan to consider the referral of Sinnenberg to a disciplinary authority other than OLAP. So the threat is there. And as I said, the threat was clear enough that Judge Hagan recognized it after reading the motion, and it was clear enough to her that he had violated the rule, that she brought the rule with her to the hearing and decided to bring it up. The record also demonstrates that respondent's sole purpose was actually to obtain dismissal of the case without further exploring the capacity of his client. Again, looking at the contents of the fitness motion, it begins and ends with reference to the stipulated dismissal that he was seeking. It's the very first three sentences of the fitness motion reference the dismissal. They say absolutely nothing about obtaining help for Roger Sinnenberg. And then the motion closes, not with a request that Judge Hagan refer Mr. Sinnenberg to OLAP, but that she dismiss the case. All plaintiffs ask for is the dismissal entry that respondent was that has been overdue since January of this year. All plaintiffs ask for is the dismissal entry that has been overdue since January of this year. So the fitness motion connects the OLAP referral and the dismissal. And then respondent further connected them at the hearing, at the June 10th, 2019 hearing, as Justice Fisher pointed out and quoted from the record, at least three times during the June 10th, 2019 hearing, respondent said to Judge Hagan, if they'll sign it, if they'll dismiss this case, we don't have to talk about my motion. Not once during that hearing did he say, dismiss the case and then I'll handle the OLAP problem. Dismiss the case and I'll make the referral. It was, so to me, it's really a question. Do we dismiss the case or do we proceed with my motion? And to me, it's your decision, he said to Judge Hagan. You're managing this courtroom. If we dismiss the case, then we don't need a ruling on my motion. If we don't dismiss the case, then I would like to address the merits of my motion. What he doesn't explain is he had the ability to go to OLAP no matter what happened with the case. Judge Hagan dismisses it. Judge Hagan doesn't dismiss it. It doesn't keep him.
Can you discuss 8.4D, engaging in conduct that's prejudicial to the administration of justice?
Certainly, Justice Bruner. This court has interpreted 8.4D as imposing an obligation on lawyers to deal fairly with the court. And as the panel found in the report at paragraph 58, respondent's decision to involve Judge Hagan in his scheme to bend Mr. Sinnenberg to his will is the epitome of unfairness. He admits that he was trying to involve Judge Hagan. He filed this thing to get the judge to give it some specter of importance, to give it some credibility, and that's prejudicial to the administration of justice because it was not fair to the court to put that on Judge Hagan, to bring that element into a case unnecessarily. So that's the 8.4D violation. He also violated Rule 3.1. The fitness motion was a frivolous motion. There's absolutely no authority that authorizes an attorney to seek a referral to OLAP via a motion to a judge on a case. He talked a bit during his argument about Judicial Conduct Rule 2.14a. He said he borrowed the language from it. But what he doesn't say, because he can't say, is that Rule 2.14a gives him any authority or any discretion to seek that kind of relief from a judge. It just doesn't apply. And I know in his briefing he talked about the fact that Judge Hagan ultimately denied Attorney Daniel Gorash's motion under Revised Code 23-2351. Attorney Gorash stood up at the June 10th hearing and said, I think that this might be a violation under that statute, and Judge Hagan denied that motion. But she said at the hearing that she was doing that in order to bring the litigation to an end, and she testified at the October disciplinary hearing in this case that she denied it because she wanted to end the case cleanly, and she had already decided that she was going to file a grievance against Mr. Whipple, and she didn't want, and she, this is her word, she didn't want to give him ammunition and say that she was biased against him with respect to this grievance. And she also testified at the October disciplinary hearing in response to questioning from a panel member that she thought that the fitness motion was a frivolous motion. So I'm running short on time, and I'd like to briefly conclude unless the court has any other questions for me. Thank you. So in the final pages of our brief, we quote the fifth paragraph of the preamble to Ohio's Rules of Professional Conduct. And that paragraph talks about the important role that lawyers play in society, how we shouldn't use the law's procedures for improper purposes like harassment or intimidation. It talks about how lawyers should demonstrate respect for the legal system, for their fellow lawyers, and for judges. Respondent's conduct in this case was contrary to that important guidance. His conduct also violated every single one of the rules of professional conduct found by the board in this case. Clear and convincing evidence demonstrates that respondent filed a frivolous motion intending to pressure Attorney Sinnenberg into dismissing the case. That conduct merits an actual suspension. Accordingly, Your Honors, relator requests that the court adopt the board's recommendation and impose an actual suspension of 1 year with 6 months' date in this case. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Whipple, you've got, I'll give you about a minute to finish up.
Your Honor, with respect to sanctions, the panel's report made no finding whatsoever of a dishonest or selfish motive. In addition, the panel improperly failed to disclose to the board any of the character evidence. I had letters from Court of Appeals, Mary Jane Trapp, Jennifer Weiler, and the relator's own lawyer referral service director, who confirmed I'm a person of honesty, integrity, and compassion. In addition, the panel improperly failed to demonstrate that license suspension is necessary to protect the public from future misconduct. After paragraph 64, makes no analysis whatsoever of that suspension is necessary. This is a singular event. There's no evidence of future misconduct in the misconduct in the past or misconduct in the future. And as this court is aware, in cases such as this, particularly for suspension, there's got to be some evidence why. It's in the interest of the public why suspension is necessary. There's no evidence that suspension is necessary to protect either the public or even any attorneys. And Judge Bruner, with respect to...
Also, you don't think spreading on the record that in a well-known attorney, by everybody's admission here, recognition, a well-known attorney whose wife is a judge, has mental health issues serious enough that OLAP should be involved with him. You don't think that a sanction that would deter any attorney from even considering a tactic such as yours is an important basis for the sanction?
Respectfully, Your Honor, the answer is no. Because, first of all, although I have argued that the essential elements haven't improved, in the context of all the facts of this case, in my recognition that I shouldn't have done it. My recognition and my testimony throughout that I would never, ever do it again. There is absolutely no evidence that I ever will do it again. Your Honor, I'm 68 years old. This is a very unique case, very unique circumstances. Your Honor, you absolutely have to know in your heart this case would never, ever happen again. And if it ever did, there's no way that would ever, ever consider repeating this conduct. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision.